Now, we talked last week about the dominant theoretical explanation for family abuse being the feminist approach, right? And we talked about how our society was evolving, and in the 60s, we got involved in the Vietnam conflict. We got involved with the peace movement. A part of that was the equality movement. And out of all of that came the feminist model of power and control. Research on family abuse up from the 70s up to the present time indicates an unwillingness to acknowledge that some women may be violent in their domestic relationships. And a lot of studies on relationship abuse have excluded female perpetrators. Strauss found this as late as 2006. This approach to assuming that the majority of domestic violence is male-caused has hampered the recognition within the GLBT community of what partner abuse really is, because the same anti-patriarchal concept that comes with the feminist approach has been used by researchers in trying to analyze GLBT domestic violence. So some experts of relationship abuse continue to support the feminist position as being viable for explaining GLBT approach, but some other experts are critical of using a gendered feminist theory, because if you think about it, the feminist approach, in an ironic twist, kind of identifies with patriarchal society and a gendered male on gendered female form of violence. And that doesn't necessarily approach doesn't necessarily agree with the complex kind of environment you find within the GLBT community, where gender roles are shifting and non-static, and, you know, that we're learning about now. The feminist approach has been used often to describe the context of battering within GLBT relationships as well as heterosexual relationships, kind of applying that the standard is the same across the board. But using the feminist approach to explain lesbian partner abuse has been done using a two-pronged analysis, with one prong, the first one being that an understanding of lesbian abuse requires an integrated analysis of oppression, where we dig into the abuse perpetration being influenced by sources of oppression that exist within the lives of lesbian and bisexual women. That's pretty heavy stuff, right? Oppression from society may cause stress in their relationship. It may cause a lowered self-esteem for some individuals. So depending on the coping mechanism of the individual, the use of alcohol or drugs, other self-destructive behaviors, these may lead to the possibility of relationship abuse. Doesn't sound that much different than taking heterosexual abuse into consideration, right? The second prong by the feminists for understanding same-sex partner abuse includes the idea that political oppression is personal, that by them living in a sexist society, that we have established gender expectations, and those gender expectations have put additional stresses on persons with non-traditional gender identifications. So that's where, from a feminist perspective, there's a twist applied against the patriarchal concept that they had. They're saying, well, because it's a sexist society, leaving out the patriarchal part, that there are some gender expectations, and because people who are of an alternative gender identity not being able to meet those established gender expectations, that there is additional stress on them, and that's why they get involved in these roles. So let's leave the feminist model behind, and let's shift gears and get into the psychological model. A second approach for conceptualizing these same-sex partner abuses suggests that the feminist approach is inadequate, because the way that the psychological model enthusiasts state, it can't explain same-sex partner abuse since both men and women can be perpetrators. It relies too heavily on men being the perpetrators. So the psychological model is seen as a gender-neutral approach. It states that partner abuse is a learned behavior, and abuse is the choice of the perpetrator, regardless of what gender they have been assigned at birth or what gender it is that they decide to assign themselves at some later time. with a little chance of being held accountable for abusive actions, the offender who has learned this type of abuse will engage in what is considered to be later than criminal behavior. The psychological model suggests that we need to make a strong message to all people, regardless of what their gender is, of how to treat others, and that public safety personnel need to do a better job in the equal enforcement of the laws and equally punishing the offenders in order to control partner abuse and same-sex relationships, so that society in general learns that it is not acceptable for there to be domestic violence within a home. The psychological model also promotes that victims have to be provided equal legal protections regardless of their gender or sexual orientation. It was interesting. Island and Letelier in 91 suggested that all batterers have a mental disorder, although they might not be insane or psychotic, that all batterers have some mental issue, mental problem. In their discussion, and again, we're looking at this from the psychological model, on gay battering, those authors found that socialization and cultural theories take the responsibility for battering away from the individual, and they serve to blame society for behaviors that are abnormal and criminal. You know, according to them, the feminist approach is a societal approach that doesn't hold people accountable, and it doesn't help them because it doesn't approach the fact that the person has a psychological problem, mental health problem, and that's why they're a batterer. So they confirmed their position that abusers suffered from a disordered personality and applied that thesis to men who beat their male lovers. And they asserted further that accountability through the public safety system, the criminal justice system, is the best intervention, and because of the mental health aspects of all of this. So not satisfied with just a feminist or a psychological model, let's take a look at a third model called the social psychological model. The social psychological model has joined major elements of feminist theory with the psychological approach. All right, so this is where you can be happy about what the feminists were saying, patriarchal society. We bend it a little bit saying that somebody adopts the male role and that's what causes us to have a terrible situation. With the psychological model, it says, well, some of these people may have just mental health issues and that the offenders need to be held accountable for what they do, regardless of what gender they are or were assigned to be at some point in time. The feminist theory and the psychological approach fall short then and are joined into the social psychological model that recognizes the socio-political context of homophobia and internalized homophobia that created an environment that supports relationship abuse because the low self-esteem which is held by the victim as well as sometimes the abuser are acted out in a form of partner abuse. And these personal characteristics influence the choice to use abuse in these relationships. It's an integrative theory that brings together three general approaches to crime causation: social learning, unequal power relationships, and personal choice theory. So the social psychological model uses a broad application of social learning theory to explain that people who abuse have learned to do so through direct instruction, you know, like the intergenerational transmission theory stuff, modeling, and reinforcement. Unequal power relations contribute to the likelihood that abusive behaviors will be tolerated, an idea which actually came from the feminists, right? A third dimension, though, is the recognition that family abuse is a personal choice, that an abuser acts out with abuse instead of using alternative conflict resolution. So according to this integrated model, then, social isolation creates an environment where battering in same-sex couples can more easily occur because of how it is that they're treated by society. Family abuse, then, needs to be understood as both a social and a psychological phenomenon. So it's a social phenomenon because of the fact that these people have been minimalized by society as being involved in deviant relationships, a psychological phenomenon because some of them may have mental health issues to begin with, which is a part of are caused by their minimization by society, but then the feminist approach being utilized as a result of the fact that people are often mimicking what are socially accepted as male roles within these relationships and then just carrying out what the patriarchal order had been for a long time. So rather than viewing family theories as mutually exclusive of each other, this combination within the social psychological model can enhance same-sex theories of abuse. And, you know, for a large extent, I think we can kind of apply it against heterosexual theory as well. Internalized homophobia. And this may address some folks that we have out here in the audience who have been dealing with this now for a while, has been linked to intimate partner violence, domestic violence, as a principal variable explaining the severity and the frequency of domestic violence within same-sex relationships. Internalized homophobia refers to the internalized stress due to homophobia, which consists of condemnation, loathing, societal disdain, religious rejection of all things that are homosexual and everybody who practices it. It's sometimes called internalized homonegativity, internalized homonegativity by some clinicians out there. But the term refers to GLBT internalization of negative social and environmental attitudes against them. The term internalized heterosexism has been suggested by Szymanski in 2004 as an alternate to internalized homophobia, internalized heterosexism. The change in terminology was suggested by Szymanski because of the negative and inaccurate connotation given to the term, but internalized homophobia is still used in most literature because it's been used in research for so long to describe the bisexual and lesbian women's internalization of society's negative feelings about her preferences. So internalized homophobia is exhibited differently throughout the life of the GLBT individual. An individual may struggle to reconcile his or her own feelings with the stigmatized view of having a non-traditional sexual identity in models of sexual identity development. This internal battle then is related to the high-risk sexual behaviors they may be involved in, suicidal thoughts, maybe suicidal attempts, maybe substance abuse issues that become part of them and the relationships that they have. The internalized homophobia may continue long after the individual reconciles their own sexual orientation. It may result in a hatred of themselves, a self-belief that homosexuality is some kind of a sickness that they suffer from. They may exhibit signs of shame or negative feelings about self-worth, negative feelings about other homosexual people, that will all be a part of their internalized homophobia, and that we should be sensitive to and responding to these people for the help that they need. Beyond the common definition of this internalized homophobia, there's a lot of variation on how the counseling community and the mental health community conceptualize and define the whole term. Herrick in 2004 suggested that internalized homophobia leads to self-hate that can involve the sense of shame for possessing the quality of their group or for other group, other members that they think possess the same qualities. And it involves an intrapsychic conflict between what people think they should be and how they should experience their own sexuality. It involves a shared knowledge about society's condemnation of sexual minorities and a shame of being associated with being a homosexual. And this is why when these people are responded to, sometimes they appear to be despondent. Because of the AOD involvement, some other things, and being able to self-medicate themselves from possible depression or excessive anxiety, there may be other complicated factors, and they may not even admit what it is that they are in being a member of the GLBT community, but then evidence on the scene would show otherwise. In a study of some same-sex lesbian relationships and the use of violence within those, results indicated that internalized homophobia may be a significant predictor of the use of physical and sexual violence. And so when you respond to the scene in these cases, please be cognizant of the fact that there may be some of that internalized homophobia on scene. There are numerous psychological problems that stem from this stuff. Psychological characteristics associated with it include the low self-esteem, self-hatred, self-doubt, a belief in one's own inferiority, There may be an acceptance of myths about homosexuality. There may be a belief that others will reject that person on the basis of their sexuality, so they may put limits on themselves. There was a study by Zemanski, again, done in 2001 on lesbian internalized homophobia, where there were significant correlations found with depression and with them passing as heterosexuals rather than dealing with their own sexual identities. So that's a sad situation. In the last part of the segment, we're going to take a look at perpetrators in gay male relationships and perpetrators in lesbian relationships. We're going to really focus in on the criminals who are out there and where they come from and what it is that they do within these specialized populations. We'll be right back.
Boys will be boys.
Well, she was drunk.
Well, he was drunk.
She was asking for it.
He warned her.
Not my problem.
Why doesn't she just leave?
He's such a nice guy.
He said he was sorry.
We don't talk about that.
It's just the way people are.
We're never going to fix it.
No more excuses.
No more silence.
No more violence.
It's time to end domestic violence and sexual assault once and for all.
You are listening to the American Public Safety Training Institute. You may have a degree, but do you have what it takes? Get your foot in the door by earning your certificate now. Online and field training available now from TAPSD. Get the skills from the best trainers in America. Find out how at www.tapsd.org.